us that then we get the secretariat to help us actually go through the process so that we can have a properly constituted meeting to proceed. The secretariat can actually request that we actually check the connectivity and those who are in the meeting.
Chair,
so that we're able to proceed. Secretariat?
Chair, we can do. I will call the names of the members just to confirm the attendance. Chair, I will start with the first one. Ms. Mwatse, Chair.
Honorable Mwatse.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Chair, and morning, colleagues.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Mumbuyane, Chair.
Honorable Mumbuyane. Honorable Mumbuyane.
Chairperson, good morning, and welcome to the meeting.
Nosia Bonga Buti, welcome. Thank you.
Mrs. Hermans, Chair.
Honorable Hermans.
Morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone on the platform.
Welcome. Thank you.
Mr. McPherson, Chair.
Honorable McPherson.
Yeah, good morning.
Thank you.
Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Honorable Mulder.
Goeiemôre, voorzitter. Thank you.
Baie dankie, môre.
Chair, Mr. Thring, Chair.
Honorable Thring.
Sanbonani, good morning all, thank you.
Oh, Molodata, good morning.
Chair, Ms. Yaku, Chair, Ms. Yaku.
Honorable Yaku.
Morning, Chair, morning everybody, I'm present.
Thank you, welcome.
Mr. Custis, Chair.
Honorable Custis.
Morning, Chairperson.
Good morning, welcome.
Mr. Burns Kamasha, Chair.
Honorable Burns Kamasha.
Morning, Chair, and morning to the colleagues as well.
Good morning and welcome.
Chair, we're having a problem with Ms. Matapung, who's trying to join the platform, and the other members. We will notify you of there when they're on the platform, Chair. Those are the members on the platform. We correct, Chair. We can proceed with the meeting, Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sure from what you say, we have constituted the presence of members that allows us to proceed. Let me ask that then we fly to the agenda for the meeting. And then maybe when I can see all of us in welcoming and opening of the meeting. Allow me to welcome all of you. I'm sure we do have secretariat and this team which is supporting. And also we do actually have, today we actually will be having the minister. There will be minister and the DG and the team. I'm sure we'll be taking through to that. And let me actually then say for the apology, I think that's an issue that you have raised, Secretariat, that there might be connectivity problem of a member or so. I'm not sure if ever there are any specific apologies, Secretariat.
Chair, we have received an apology from the Deputy Minister, Gina. She's attending her official engagement this morning. That's why she will not be able to attend this meeting, Chair.
Okay, let's note have that apology accepted, unless maybe there's someone with an issue. Apology is of Deputy Minister Gina. On the apologies, I think that's the only point we have got, and then we can look at the adoption of the agenda. The agenda item is what is before us. It is actually the briefing by the Minister on SONA budget as well. And I think we're looking at issues of the DTIC mandate, as well as the issue of economy recovery plan. That's the agenda item we agreed to, and I'm sure we do actually have to introduce the minister to get to that. Can I just check if ever members of the committee are comfortable that we proceed as they're
wish to move that the agenda be adopted as tabled. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There is a move for the adoption. Can I check if ever there's any second for the adoption?
Yes, Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Honorable Mwatse.
Yes, Chair. Seconded.
Thank you very much. Let me check if ever there's any objections on the adoption of the agenda. In the absence, allow me to actually invite the Minister and the DG, supported with their team. I'm sure they'll indicate how we actually have the representative team. Honorable Minister, allow me to invite you to actually take us through your presentation and allow me to welcome yourself and the DG and the team. Honorable Minister, good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to you. Good morning to the Honorable Members, to the Deputy Minister, to the officials of the Department and Parliament, and to those members of the public that may be following the proceedings. Chairperson, this is the first meeting that I'm attending of the Portfolio Committee since the sad passing away of Honorable Tuzama Mantashe, who was a very active member of the Portfolio Committee. And I want to associate myself with those messages of condolences as well as the tributes that members of Parliament, including members in this committee, paid to our late colleague in the proceedings of the National Assembly. Chairperson, I've been requested by the Portfolio Committee to put forward some thoughts on SONA and Budget 2021 and the implications for the DTIC. To recall, at the start of the administration, the President in the first State of the Nation address set out the broad framework that would be followed by government in this administration. And we then worked to convert that State of the Nation address to a medium-term strategic framework. This year, there are seven steps. One of it is unusual that we're taking to implement the SONA vision and to utilize the budget resources. So I really want to start by appreciating the opportunity that the Portfolio Committee has given us to highlight at a very early stage in the parliamentary process where we are and how we will take the SONA framework and the resources of the budget to drive the programs of the DTIC and its entities. So thank you very much, Chairperson, to you and to the Honourable Members. Now, to recall the seven steps between now and the conclusion of the work which we will be giving in Parliament, the first step was an unusual one, which is not normally done, and that was the tabling by the President in October last year of the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan. And that plan, of course, was a direct response to the very significant economic challenges that we faced as a result of the pandemic, and it provided the broad framework for SONA. So SONA did not put forward a new plan. It really focused on implementation and on highlighting some areas of progress made with the implementation of the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan. The second step in the seven steps that is normally followed is we had a cabinet lehotla in January this year, which is at the start of the year when national government works with provinces and municipalities to highlight the key challenges with implementation, and that lechutla then provides the basis for the president to address the nation. That brings me to the third step, which was the State of the Nation address in February and the debate that followed the State of the Nation address, and that I will come back to some of the areas as the committee has requested. The fourth element in this seven steps is the budget itself, the budget tabled by the Minister of Finance, which indicates the final allocation of resources to departments and entities. And as soon as the budget is finally tabled in Parliament, departments can then, as it were, bank on the resources that are allocated and adjust their plans accordingly. The fifth step is today's session with the Portfolio Committee, where the Portfolio Committee has provided an opportunity for a brief reflection on SONA and the budget. The sixth one is an important step, and that is when we convert the SONA vision, the budget allocation, into an annual performance plan. And that annual performance plan is now being finalized, and it is normally tabled, or we are expected to table it in Parliament by mid-April, and that then provides a better indication of how we are now adjusting the goals of the department. What are the particular performance indicators in the light of SONA and the budget that we will deal with? And so the team is working quite hard on that. And the seventh and final step in this planning process is the budget vote. And the budget vote provides an opportunity for the ministry to indicate publicly, both to Parliament and more broadly, how the resources have finally been allocated. In other words, beyond the broad aggregates, how they would now find expression in specific programs and commitments. We begin the tabling of the annual performance plans. They already commence from the 11th of March, and they have to be completed by mid-April so that they meet a three-week period before the Portfolio Committee has to consider the annual performance plan itself. So that's the overall structure of our work, and of course, a big part of today's session will enable us to take into account any feedback that members of Parliament has as we now finalise the annual performance plan. On the resources that we have available, the budget sets out the allocations. There's generally a degree of flexibility for us within programs, but it does indicate the key elements. So, for example, ordinarily one is not able to shift resources, say, from staffing to incentives. So they do provide a rather clear framework within which we need to allocate. If we start with SONA, the State of the Nation address, of course, is the primary, if one likes, approach of government for the year, for the financial year, and the President outlines that. This year, the President highlighted four priorities. He made it clear that these are not the only work that government will do, but he wanted to lift these as absolutely critical. They're about health and saving lives, about economic recovery and reconstruction, economic reforms, and building state capacity and fighting corruption. So those are the four themes that were highlighted. The budget highlighted areas, or the debate of SONA highlighted some areas of progress. So we indicated where we thought we had made some real gains. For example, in the case of the DTIC areas, we referenced in the debate the progress made with issues like mass and mass in founding session 2019. It was then highlighted and incorporated in the economic reconstruction and recovery plan and lifted out for this year in SONA. So that's how the different elements of this comes together. In addition to the issue of the priorities that SONA has set in broad terms, the President also referred to the need to build a more dynamic economy, and the main instrument that the DTIC will use for that is the master plans. To recall, four of the master plans are now in implementation phase, two are being finalized, and we will commence in the new financial year with the technical work for a further 1 to 2 master plans. Now, the master plans build a more dynamic economy, and the portfolio committee had an opportunity at an earlier session to get a briefing from the department on the work that has been done on master plans. I will take that presentation that was done recently as a useful input and background for the committee to consider as we finalize the annual performance plan. Then secondly, the SONA highlighted the importance of improving exports, particularly trade with the rest of the African continent, and we have three elements to the African Continental Free Trade Area that we'll be focusing on, that will be incorporated in our annual performance plan, and that I will, together with the deputy ministers, be speaking on more when we get to the budget vote. And that is, first, the trade aspect itself. There are some negotiations that will be done this year. For example, we will be working very closely with the rest of the continent to increase the number of products for which we can have agreed rules of origin. And as we get more products in place, we would be able to lift the overall target that we've set for ourselves, and over the next number of months we expect to make progress there. In the further sessions of the committee, I will be briefing the committee also in a bit more detail on the AFC-FTA. But the trade dimension is only one element of it, and trade in goods is important. But we also hope this year to do more work on trade in services and get some further convergence of thinking between the different countries that have ratified the African Continental Free Trade Area. Once we've completed the trade framework, the next big question for us on the AFC-FTA is the export strategy. So we've worked now with particular sectors to develop their sector plans for exports using the new framework. We will be launching now, commencing in March, but continuing over the next number of months, work that the deputy ministers will be leading on engagements with district municipalities to try to develop district-level export plans for the African Continental Free Trade Area. And then in addition to that, we're going to be looking at opportunities through the AFC-FTA for transformation, innovation, using South African innovation to drive our export efforts. And the final element besides trade and export promotion is a supportive infrastructure. It's not one that the DTIC has the primary mandate on, but we will be working with other government departments and with neighboring countries to strengthen both the physical infrastructure but also the financial infrastructure. By physical infrastructure, I would refer to things like rails and ports and border posts and so on. And by way of the financial infrastructures, things like the payment systems and so on that enables the smooth transfer of money between buyers and sellers. I've spoken about building dynamic industries. That's a theme of SONA and how we will use the master plans as the main, although not the only, instrument to drive it. I've spoken briefly about promoting trade and the AFC-FTA. The third broad area that I want to speak to then is investment. And here our work will be on monitoring the flow of investments into the real economy, both domestic investment as well as foreign investment, and as part of that, seeing where are the obstacles and challenges that investors face. Sometimes it's a water use license, other times it is a challenge of weak infrastructure, and work with them to resolve that. We'll also work to bring in new investment to make South Africa a more attractive place, and some of the economic reforms that the President outlined that will be done by other departments, energy, communication and so on, provides the DTIC with an opportunity to attract fresh investment into the economy and into the country. We would also, in the course of this year, be working on the investment conference, the hosting of the conference, and we hope as the success of the vaccine rollout begin to impact on society, that the investment conference can be even more successful than last year. So that covers the broad theme of investment. We then come to special development. The President referenced special economic zones, and honorable members would have seen the budget allocations which the CFO is available to take the committee through on special economic zones. To date, the DTIC had worked principally on providing the legal enablers for special economic zones, so the department working with provinces provides to the ministry a proposal for a designation. If they meet the criteria, an area is designated, and thereafter the DTIC provides some resources for infrastructure, in other words, for your bulk infrastructure, water, sewage, those kind of things, and some support with top structures, which is the building of premises and the other elements that make it possible for investors to move swiftly to set up new operations. It has had some successes, but I think we were very frank in our engagement with the committee in the past to say that the impact has been uneven, strong progress in some areas. The Kuga SEZ is an example, Dube Trade Port, and historically the Special Economic Zone in East London has had some modest successes. But starting in 2019 and last year, we began to revamp the Special Economic Zone program. And we started with a pilot, which is the Tshwane Special Economic Zone. And this has been a big part of new learnings for government, where there's a new model of engagement between national, provincial, and local government that has been utilized. And we've seen some early fruit in the Tshwane Special Economic Zone. We've formed a strong partnership with a core investor, in this case the Ford Motor Company, and through that we are attracting a number of investors. with 12 investors indicating their keenness to start manufacturing in the Tshwane Special Economic Zone. And so this year, the new financial year, will see a very significant upscaling of how we go about our special economic zones. There is some additional resources, principally for infrastructure, that's in the budget, and we're now working on an implementation plan where the department works with provinces now much more closely to attract investors. Previously, we were, if I could use the analogy, we provided a push resource. We helped put money into an area to build the infrastructure in the expectation that that would attract investors. Now we are shifting to a dual push-pull, where in addition to pushing resources into an area, we also want to pull investors there even before the infrastructure is in place, so that a lot more work of the department will be on attracting investors in partnership with provinces. So spatial development will be a bigger part of our work in the new financial year than it has been in the past. And in the budget vote in May, much more evidence of that will be shared with the portfolio committee. But we will be working now, as in March we begin the engagement on the annual performance plan. We finalize aspects of it and begin the preparation for implementation. The special economic zones will feature more significantly. I did indicate previously, and I in the new financial year, we'll make a more formal announcement soon, but we will be starting the new unit at the IDC, a PMU that will be driving special economic zones. The fifth area that the President raised was issues of the capable state, strengthening the performance of the state. And there's a number of things that the department will focus on and is now being finalized in the annual performance plan and will be announced in the budget book. One aspect of it is the ease of doing business, and there the work of the department is in a few areas. The DTIC is principally responsible for company registrations, and so we work very closely now with the CIPC to maintain what has become a cutting-edge and very strong registration system. And this system is now at the point where we are able to see the early results of the measures that have been taken in the past. Honorable members will recall that we had spoken a number of times in the past about the reforms in the CIPC. I am happy to say that those reforms, while not complete, because we're still wanting to strengthen even further what we can do, has begun to have a positive effect. And by way of an illustration, we can point to the reference by the President in SONA on this area of work. Last week, on Friday last week, the CIPC in fact scooped a number of awards from the Center of Public Service Innovation, and it received the award as the most innovative public service entity for the year 2020. And award for the effective use of digitized services for the BIS portal. And we are pleased to advise the portfolio committee that since the pilot started in November 2019, we called it a soft launch, to date 141,000 businesses have been registered through Biz Portal as part of the new system of online registration. And that is a very significant gain for us as a country, that we have this facility available. I highlight this because it is an area that points to where the DTIC can play a role in the ease of doing business. It's not sufficient. There are still other challenges that businesses face, and we will be working now in partnership with the provinces, the municipalities, and national departments responsible for those areas. In building the capable state, we're also going to be looking at institutional matters affecting entities, strengthening the entities, dealing with challenges of performance, and where there are allegations of corruption, addressing these. And this is an important part of enabling South Africans to benefit from the public entities. Finally, on the capable state, the DTIC has commenced work in the last financial year on developing a common back office that enables services to be rendered to different entities, and a stronger connection between the work of the department and the budget of the department and that of its core entities like the IDC and the NEF. So we expect more work could be done there, and that we can launch in the course of this new financial year further initiatives that will increase the impact of what we do. The sixth area that the President referred to in SONA was economic inclusion. And in the area of economic inclusion, the work that we've done in the last year has been on competition. For example, the market inquiry that was held on data prices provided the impetus for a very significant cut in data prices on the 1st of April last year, where prices for the most popular bundles that many South Africans use decreased by 30%. The work out of the market inquiry on shopping malls has arrived at some undertakings that major retailers have made to begin phasing out and ending the exclusive leases by which one big shopping mall would have an anchor tenant, a grocery retailer typically, that would have exclusivity that no other grocery stores can be opened. We've seen that as anti-competitive and as discriminating against small businesses and new entrants, and that that kind of effort will be strengthened further in the new year. We have a few additional areas that we are now finalizing for announcement when the new financial year starts, and that will be part of the work of the Competition Commission. In addition to that, economic inclusion also embraces greater impact of our transformation policies. And in the past financial year, we've reached agreement. Two very significant announcements were made in the last 12 months. The one was with the merger of Simba Chips and Pioneer Foods, that approximately 13% of the shares were set aside for workers of the merged company, and with the merger of the three bottling plants of Coca-Cola, there was a commitment and an agreement that 15% of the shares of Coca-Cola will be set aside for workers of the company. So in the new financial year, there will be a greater focus on broadening the base of empowerment and enabling more South Africans to see the benefits of economic activity and economic growth. So what I've done now, honourable members, is give the committee, I hope, early indication of the kind of areas that we're working on now as we finalize the annual performance plan in these areas that Sona highlighted. And today's discussion is not the plan itself, because that will be tabled in Parliament and will then be the subject of a presentation that we will make to Parliament on the plan. But it gives, I hope it helps provide the committee with the kind of areas that we're looking at for the new financial year. Now, I referred earlier to the Economic Reconstruction and Development Plan. What that plan did, if one asks what's the distinctive feature of that plan for the DTIC, it is strategic localization for jobs and growth. While we spoke of localization in the past, what the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan did was it lifted it to an area of significant focus, and through that work we have now identified something of the order of 42 products that will be now incorporated in our work for the new financial year, and by the time we have the budget vote, significant enough work would have been done for the ministry to lay out where we're heading with the localization program. The reconstruction and recovery plan also looked at revitalizing manufacturing, and so I've spoken about the master plans. Designation of new products that the state will purchase locally will be included in the revitalization of manufacturing, and we're working with SARS now to deal with illicit imports, products that are brought into the country either through false invoices or under declaration or false labeling, and those will be all elements of what needs to be done to revitalize South African manufacturing. I should note that there's been very strong support among others by Honorable Dring and others for beneficiation, and so the revitalization of manufacturing is also about beneficiation, and we would share with the committee as we finalize in the budget vote the different aspects of our work, where the key focus will be. But clearly the Steel Master Plan is at the heart of a very significant part of beneficiation, but it's not the only one. African economic integration is identified in the Reconstruction and Development Plan, as well as simplifying and aligning BEE for effective empowerment. The DTIC's key performance indicators will indicate what we need to do, where we will drive it as a department with our entities. But we will also need to provide support and assistance to other departments of government, because there are areas that fall outside the DTIC where our support can help unlock economic opportunities and strengthen the recovery. They include areas like growing the digital economy, greening the economy, which should now be an all-of-government effort, supporting agriculture and agro-processing, which we do with a sister department, the work inside of government on utilizing the opportunities from the hemp industry and certain parts of the cannabis industry, and of course small business development, which whilst there is a department and a ministry that champions this and leads our thinking, is so important that we all need to support and strengthen the work of the Minister of Small Business Development. So on the question that the Portfolio Committee asks, how does SONA impact on the DTIC? I've highlighted the SONA areas. I've clustered them in six broad categories, and I've indicated the work that we're now doing to develop these annual performance plans. What I know would be most interesting to the committee in the run-up to the budget vote is, within all of that, what do we expect to finalize this year? What will we start on this year? And what is the broad allocation of indicative resources that we will put in place? And that will be highlighted in the annual performance plan. What the annual performance plan also is seeking to do is addressing the budget constraints. So, honourable members would have seen that there's been a 5% increase in the budget allocation compared to what a few months ago we had been expecting. And but I point out that this is off a very significant reduced baseline. The original budget support for 2020-2021 was 11 billion rand, and that of course had to be trimmed and adjusted to make resources available to support the health crisis and to enable the state to finance the measures that the president announced during last year. So there is now inside the department in the remaining few weeks an effort, a strong effort that the DG and the team is doing to see how we can ensure that we adjust where necessary. For example, in the next couple of months, there can't be the same level of physical export promotion programs where we send people abroad. So we're able to save a little bit of that. But it means also that we have to retool how to still make a big impact in our export effort using the new tools. And can we then take some resources from the allocation to utilize new ways of driving the export effort? So that's one example of how we're doing this work. The special economic zones have received an increase in the allocation. And it highlights both our recognition that there's a significant infrastructure gap with some of the special economic zones, but also the new focus that we will be driving through the special unit in the IDC in the period ahead on the growth of these special economic zones. In addition to the increase in the budget of the special economic zones, the other significant one to point to is the growth in the budget of the Competition Commission. That is in anticipation of the Competition Commission now using the new powers that it has obtained from Parliament through the amendments to the Competition Act. These were finalized in 2019 and 2020 through a number of regulations that we've published that provide certainty to the market on what is expected. And the missing element that we've been needing to fill is the petrol in the vehicle, in other words, the budget allocation. And that has now been made available in the resource envelope, and the CFO can speak to that. But it's an increase of, if my memory recalls, about 140 million rand in the allocation that can be utilized. Together with the good news on those two fronts, there are challenges. Our incentives budgets are under enormous pressure with cutting and trimming that is required in a range of the manufacturing programs. And the challenge we've set, and it's now being looked at in the APP work, is how can we maintain the same level of ambition with fewer resources. So we're doing our best to see with the with the obvious exception of instances where the objective factors constrain us. For example, if global growth is weak, then export performance may be affected by that. But with those kind of exceptions, how can we still achieve the kind of growth that we envisage with poultry or with clothing and textiles and so on? And this is difficult because all of the industries that have been affected by the pandemic last year, like clothing and textiles, have reported a very sharp reduction in sales that now those sectors need to recover from. In our work, we're also wanting to keep some areas that are important to us. For example, to maintain the focus on services, the business process services. We managed to get a little bit of additional resources from the program on employment expansion that the president announced last year. We were able to get some additional resources from National Treasury that will allow us to, strengthen that piece of work. And of course, film production has been affected by the pandemic across the world, but we hope that as conditions begin to normalize, that more filming can take place in South Africa. The green industry is going to be an increasingly important matter. COVID pointed us to the vulnerabilities and fragility that we have in the age of globalization, that a virus that 1,000 years ago may have affected one part of the world is now able to move rapidly and cause havoc and devastation across nations. Similarly, climate change may have an impact not in one country, not in one part of the world, but across the world, and therefore a greater effort will need to be made on greening the economy. So within each of the core programs of the DTIC, we're looking now at ways of strengthening the green economy impact. For example, in the auto sector, we are now looking to see what more can be done in the auto master plan to lift out efforts there. The president referred to the fact that South Africa's first commercially scaled hybrid vehicle, which is a vehicle that uses a combination of an electric motor and an internal combustion engine, a diesel engine, will be rolled out towards the end of this year. And this is one example of it. It's an important example of South Africa embracing a cleaner and greener vehicle production strategy. But it's not the only area. We've also referred in the past to other manufacturing efforts, and one example is the effort in KwaZulu-Natal by DeFi, a manufacturer of white goods. And they've now produced a fridge and freezer that uses solar panels to decrease electricity usage. And so a big part of our work in the year ahead will be to build those elements into the work of the department. Perhaps as I conclude this part of the remarks, I should note that manufacturing resources has been decreased on a year-to-year basis, quite a significant reduction, but some of it has been finding the money to support distressed companies, so that as a first step we save what we have as we then work to improving the impact of the DTIC. The budget for public entities has increased principally as a result of the Competition Commission additional resources. So in the course of the year, a number of the entities will also have to do the adjustments that the department has to do to trim some of the less effective spending to ensure that we improve the efficiency of the money that we have so that we can achieve more with the available resources. So, Chairperson, I want to recall the communication today with the Portfolio Committee. We've been given an opportunity to reflect on our work for the annual performance plan and the budget vote, using SONA and the budget as the framework. I've highlighted the key areas that we'll be focusing on and what we will do, by when, with what resources will be covered in the annual performance plan and in the budget vote announcements that we will be making. And so this provides that framework within which we are doing that work now. And as I've indicated, we are expected to have the first annual performance plans ready for tabling. The tabling period opens the 11th of March in Parliament, and it may go for as long as mid-April. That enables portfolio committees then to meet in early May, and the budget vote would then be in the second half of May. Chairperson, the CFO is present today and is available to elaborate on some of the budget issues, and of course the Director General, whose team is very, very busy at the moment with the finishing touches on the annual performance plan, is also available to provide additional programmatic details. But the full version of that, the finalized one, will be the one that we will table in Parliament in the annual performance plan. I would welcome any feedback that members of Parliament has to us, that while it is the responsibility of the executive to finalize and table the annual performance plan, those plans tend to be stronger and better with the benefit of feedback from members of the legislature, because you've seen where the department has achieved well, where there have been challenges in the past year, and any comments and suggestions, of course, will be carefully considered by the deputy ministers, myself, the DG, and the management team of the department. While I've spoken principally about the department, I have in that rubric also included, Chairperson, the entities. Increasingly, not only because we're in a fiscally constrained environment, but because we're building a more integrated state. Recall the comment by the President about building a capable state. There will be a much stronger focus this year, this new financial year, on integrating efforts of particularly significant public entities with the work of the directorates of the department. So thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity to provide a framework on how SONA and the budget is shaping the thinking of the DTIC, and the ball, as they say, will land when we table the annual performance plan, when I hope we would be able to show how we've converted these broad concepts into the key performance indicators. Thank you very much, Chairperson, both the accounting officer and the chief financial officer are available to supplement these remarks, but let me first hand over to the Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Let me just say, for the part of the presentation today, it's more to the issues related to SONA and budget and the DTIC mandate, as well as in the economic recovery plan. We do have time recovery plan. So one was actually thinking it will actually be in order if ever there's any contribution or input today on the issues that you have raised, but I'm sure members will be able to pick up on the comments you have made and be able to actually pick up on issues where there might be further clarity that may be seeked in terms of what you have presented, Minister. So I think maybe at this point, unless maybe there's any further comments on your team which you suggest be highlighted from the DG and CFO, if not, I would actually then have to request that we invite members of the portfolio committee to actually comment and or ask questions for clarity on the basis of what you have actually shared with us right now. So I think maybe that will be the approach we take, because we have had session to actually be able to speak to yourself today, SONA budget and other, and the recovery plan. Tomorrow be able to look at entities in terms of that aspect. So, Minister, I'm not sure if ever there's actually any further contribution you suggest, but if not, allow me to go back to the portfolio committee members and actually take questions and or make comments on the basis of the input that you have given to us now. So I'll actually then do that. If you suggest there's further impact, that, inputs, that's fine. If not, then I will actually invite the members of the portfolio committee, Minister.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Perhaps I should just ask the Director General, followed by the CFO, if they would like to make any additional comments and remarks so through the chair, given that the chair has given that opportunity. If we could see whether DG October would like to just add anything.
Okay, DG. Your line is actually a bit blurry. I'm not sure. You actually do have those gadgets, and sometimes you actually, today it's a bit blurry. If you can try again, DG. The line is terrible. It's terrible.
You can see the effect of budget cuts on the performance of the department.
well, they call it connectivity. Okay, let's actually, DG, maybe we can actually look at your part a bit. Maybe we can look at CFO, Minister, you said, and then let's check if the DG will be sorted out. Minister?
Yes, Chair, if you would just permit through you, if we could ask DG if you could make a comment now, because he switched his video off, perhaps that helps.
Sure. Okay. DG? DG? It's terrible. Maybe switch off the video right now, DG. Let's see if it improves your voice. Yeah, the line is terrible. Can switch off the video and let's see if it improves your voice, your mic. Okay, let's try again, DG. Minister, it looks like there's that connectivity challenge with the DG. Maybe we can pick up the CFO and see if there are any issues. That we'll go back to the DG again. Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for bearing with us. Can I ask Shabir, the CFO, if you would like to just make some additional remarks?
Thank you, Minister, and good morning, Chairperson, and to the honourable members. I think what the Minister has very eloquently done this morning, he has set out a framework in which the department will then use to actually formulate the annual performance plan and the budget. Whilst the budget has been tabled and delivered by the Minister of Finance on the 24th of February, the department is still allowed to make certain adjustments to the budget as the year goes along. It's important to note, and as the Minister has mentioned, while there has been a 5% increase year to year on the budget was still prepared under enormous economic challenges, and literally there was no room for the department to actually bring on new programs, but literally to see how best we deprioritize funding towards building the economy and building those sectors as outlined in the master plans. Just to highlight on a high level, and as when we do come back to the portfolio committee and present the annual performance plan and the budget, it's important to note that we have managed to successfully negotiate a relatively well balanced budget with National Treasury. We are seeing a year-on-year increase over the MTF, starting with a 9.7 billion rand budget on the 2021-22 financial year, increasing slightly to 9.9 billion in 2022-23, and just to around 10.1 billion in 2023-24. Over the MTF, it does give us enough opportunities for us to engage Treasury and to see how best we reprioritize this budget to meet our mandate. I think it's important to note that the budget, whilst it has been there has been an increase, it has been prepared in the context that there was a large reduction in the prior year. Chairperson, I think overall, I think we managed to provide support largely to the key programs, which is the incentives, and just on a very high level, we have an infrastructure budget or a budget that supports the infrastructure program of around 1.7 billion rand for this year. We're moving along to some of our membership or international organizations like the WTO, the World Intellectual Property Organization. We do have a budget of around 43 million for that. Furthermore, we do have a number of partnerships with business associations and NEDLAC, and we do have a budget of around 66 billion for that category. And then we do have a number of external programs, like the one that we have at the IDC, which is the clothing and textile, and also a program at the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, which we do work quite closely with these state organs to manage those programs. Moving on to the DTI business incentives, we have a budget of around 2.9 billion rand, but this is to support various programs in export, manufacturing, and the services sector. And lastly, the budget of the entities is around plus minus 2 billion rand. And here what we have managed to do and successfully negotiate with Treasury is a very well-balanced budget for the entities. I think when the cuts happened in this financial year, the entities were one of the areas which took a major cut as Treasury looked for monies to support the health crisis. So, Chairperson, on a high level, that's the budget. But when we do come back to the portfolio committee on the annual performance plan presentation, we will provide you a much more detailed presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Minister, can actually then check, DG, maybe you've been actually sorted with your connectivity, DG? DG October.
Jefferson, may I suggest respectfully through you if we could give the committee members an opportunity to make remarks. I think DJ has a challenge. He's messaged me, and we'll see if we can give him the space with your permission to sort out his problems.
Okay. No, that's in order, Minister. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we can be able to actually open up for comments and or questions for clarity. If ever there are any, can I check Secretariat? Yes.
We have a number of members, Chair. I will call out the names. Mr. Mulder, followed by Mr. McPherson, followed by Mrs. Hermans, Ms. Yaku, and Mr. Tring, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. In that order, we do have, you said, Honorable Mulder, and then McPherson, and Honorable Hermans.
And yeah. Ms. Yaku, and Mr. Tring.
Okay. Thank you very much. In that order, let's invite Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, Honorable Chief. Good morning to you, Honorable Minister Patel. I will be sure to give my colleagues opportunity to ask questions as well, because there are lots of detail included, and recognizing and thanks to all that's been done. I recognize the fact that we've got huge challenges in the country, especially as far as the COVID-19 situation is concerned. My questions would be around about the four priorities of the department as outlined by President Cyril Ramaphosa, namely winning the fight against COVID-19, acceleration of the economic recovery, the inclusive economic reforms to drive inclusive growth, and fighting of corruption and strengthening of the state. My question is purely from a business perspective or point of view, namely that only one of these four priorities are actually business related based on business principles. The other three comes with a premium, and they are actually measures. The fight against the COVID-19 is something that we're confronted with. We can't do anything about that, but it's not. That's actually a measure that comes with a premium. The second one, which also comes with a premium, where the premium is the economic reforms, which is not always purely based on business principles. And then the fighting of corruption, of course, is a premium. It's actually an obstacle that needs to be addressed. So there's only really one of these priorities that's purely based on business principles, namely accelerating economic recovery and economic growth. My question is, if we consider the medium-term budget view, considering the decrease in budget in real terms, taking inflation into account over the next 3 years, shouldn't the department have a total fresh rethink? Replanning about its focus areas and outcomes? And the reason why I ask it, for the simple reason, if we just continue doing the same things, we're going to get the same results. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honourable McPherson.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you, Minister. Hope you can share whatever you're eating with us as well. A couple of things. I think that, you know, the department and, quite frankly, the president hangs his entire legacy and future of the country on the economic recovery and reconstruction plan. And yet, since the plan was launched, the needle on investment, on development, on reforms seems not to be taking place, or at best in very limited ways. And you will cite, you know, master plans as an example of economic reform. But that's, you know, not reform in itself. Because I think what the country so desperately needs is for the government and the DTI to stop trying to do the same old things in different ways. I think there needs to be an entirely different approach to the way that it views things. So as long as it views things in sort of, you know, through the dogma of continual consensus, of, you know, trying to, you know, sort of placate interest groups, whether those be interest groups in the political party that governs the country or other interest groups, I think that we continue to stagnate. I mean, and you've been around for a long time, so, you know, we use words like 2009, or say at least 2014 onwards, as headwinds, and now we're going to start blaming coronavirus for why nothing can happen. But I want to use an example of what I'm talking about. So the current ability for new power generation is immense, and the investment pipeline is incredible. And yet there is a holdup, which now seems to be shifting to your department over its desire for localization and local content. And that, of course, is something that any patriotic South African supports, but not to the extent that it drives up prices, as the European Union has said, by up to 20% possibly, and delays these projects indefinitely. And these delays come from, you know, the insistence that, you know, the solar panels are produced in South Africa when we don't have that type of capacity. Now, what the Economic and Reconstruction Plan envisages or believes wrongly is that if you look to create demand, that production will follow. But, you know, any person who understands Manufacturing 101 knows that that is a timeline that doesn't take place overnight. And so the impossible requirements on localization on many of these projects will actually be its downfall, because that immediate capacity just simply doesn't exist. We're now falling way behind Bidwindow 5 because of these delays. So, you know, I think while intentions are noble, execution continues to lack. We talk, you know, about these master plans, which, you know, some seem to be more focused than others, but others seem to actually concentrate competition and supply in a very few people's hands, which seem to be the antithesis of what you speak about quite often, about opening up competition, about opening up markets. And yet what we do is we seek to channel that into one area. And I think the Steel Master Plan is a great example. I mean, ArcelorMittal continues to be the single biggest winner, is protected by tariffs, have no desire to implement efficiency or cost reduction measures. And why would you, when you have a government acting as your personal economic bodyguard? And the people who are the biggest losers are, in fact, those who are downstream. Poultry is another wonderful example. I mean, the DTI is going out to bat for multi-billion rand businesses that are listed on the JSE, who have no intention and no desire to see any competitive efficiency within their business, which will only lead to increased chicken prices for low-income South Africans. Do we want more things to be produced in South Africa? Absolutely. Do we want cheaper products to be available to South Africans? Of course. Is this the way that we should be going about it? I'm not totally convinced, and I'm not seeing much results for it. You know, we talk about these, you know, investments pouring in,
cranes dotting the skies, and yet we continue to lose jobs, and those investments are very hard to find. So I think, Minister Patel, to be frank, I think that the economic recovery plan has a credibility problem at the moment. I think that the DTI also has a credibility problem, that it says things and does things completely differently. And I think that, you know, if we are to restore investment confidence in South Africa, we need to start talking about broader empowerment and not continually focusing on making the politically connected elite richer and richer as long as they hold a certain political membership card. And that is the fact of life. It happens every single day in this country, and no one will be able to convince certainly me or the now 42% unemployed South Africans that BEE has any meaningful desire to create broad empowerment. So I would like you to take us through what the department is doing to restore credibility within this economic program, because actually the future of this country hinges on it working. No one wants it to fail, but right now it seems to be going nowhere slowly, and the only thing that is rapidly increasing is unemployment, poverty, and inequality. Thank you.
Honourable Hammonds.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister, for this presentation. Let me start by congratulating the CIPC on their achievement, and we proudly celebrate with them their innovation and excellence, and they are actually showing the way to other entities how to excel at what they do. Minister, is it possible for us to hear a bit more about the cooperative work that is being done with other departments in order for us to create a conducive environment for investment? You did mention some of the areas of collaboration, but I think it would help us if we get more detail, and maybe that will come with your APPs, but if you can share with us, because it is such a symbiotic relationship, even if we take what Honourable McPherson spoke about in terms of energy, etc. And even if we look at upping our beneficiation and localization, it needs a collaborative effort of other departments in government. Then I want to believe that the master plan does speak to something that was mentioned by the President in his SONA address as a pillar of our economic recovery, which is our manufacturing capacity. So as you develop your APPs, we would like to see where your plans actually speak to increasing our manufacturing capacity, because by doing so we'll be putting more people in jobs and reviving the economy. Thank you very much, Minister and Chair.
Honourable Iyako.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry for my video quality, using my cell phone. I wanted to talk to the Minister, first of all, thank you for the presentation. I wanted to talk to the Minister about the master plans. I think I have to agree with Honourable McPherson on the part that as a department, I've felt that we turn to do one thing and do another, or say one thing and do another, and there's no consistency in the things that we have outlined from the onset of the sixth parliament. And I wanted to understand from his standpoint and the DG, with the master plans, exactly where do they think more successes are to come from in the sixth parliament that we as a committee can assist in maybe overseeing and maybe being part of, in terms of a lot of things. Also, he spoke about export sector plans and a special economic zones. And I wanted to know, because he's saying that he's saying to enhance the work of special economic zones, particularly with regards to exports and ports and tariffs. We have already special economic zones, but how are we to enhance them to do most of the work and not pilot, because those special economic zones have been there for a while. And I know that we have some successes, but I'm not seeing us channeling a lot of work towards what we already have. I see that we have work that has been there, but we tend to move from doing that work to starting something else. And for me, that doesn't bode well in terms of progress with our plans to build economic growth and state capacity. You spoke of, Minister, new investments and building, and the focus being on your building a portfolio. Especially with, but I want to understand, what about the portfolios that, or the monies that you have channeled towards investing in small businesses, as particular IDC and also NEF? How are you equipping them in bringing back that investment that you've made from there? What is your plan in terms of giving those small businesses who've had to suffer, particularly during the COVID period, into generating those money back? Because I know that some of the monies that have been donated or have been given as investments towards small companies have actually been lost because of not enough support in terms of COVID. So I think we should really start to focus more on ourselves as a country, and then we can start to look at other bigger pictures in terms of bringing internal investment for our country. And to reiterate what Honorable Herman was saying, because that was also my thought, in that we are dealing with many departments as if we are a staff, and we have all these departments working around us. But I think we are not really, we're not interacting enough with them in terms of making sure that we do our part, and we're also able to step out of ourselves and assist where we see that there's a gap and bring that into DTICT so that we can see how we can enhance that particular space. So how are you working with other departments, specifically your sports and arts and culture, and like she said, the other entities as well, the other departments as well? Thank you very much, Che.
Honorable Thring.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have a few questions, so I'm going to go straight into the questions that I have. Minister, thank you again for the presentation. Certainly appreciate the information that has been given to us in terms of the rolling out of the broad frameworks given by the President at SONA and how it actually impacts our committee and department. So my first question is, what is the level of inter-cooperation with sister departments to leverage the national infrastructure plan? The Department of Public Works and Infrastructure has received numerous presentations on the large infrastructure plan that the President is about to roll out, with billions of rands, largely, you know, water, electricity infrastructure, infrastructure within your different municipalities, substructure, and so on. So what is our level of cooperation with that? And I think you did touch on that very briefly. The second question is, what is the SMART plan with regards to our SEZs, localization, beneficiation, and the remaining master plans? So the, you know, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time frames. So I think I did ask last year, particularly with regards to beneficiation, if we could have a list of minerals, for example, that we are exporting largely rather than beneficiating locally. So besides those that, and I appreciate the report that was given, I think the DG presented that report, appreciate that in terms of how far we've gone with beneficiation. But certainly I think in my opinion, it's just not enough. You know, we still have currently one of the largest unemployment rates in decades, just over 32%, 42% on the expanded definition of unemployment. So what is our smart plan with regards to our FEZ's localization beneficiation? So we are planning to, for example, roll out with regards to localization beneficiation, there's 20 other minerals or on localization, these particular products. These are 20, 30 different products that are going to be localized. So if we could just have a little bit more information on that. Then how relevant is the World Economic Forum to our economic growth? And what is our involvement there? Understanding that the World Economic Forum also, some decisions that are taken, they also impact the rest of the world. So what is our involvement and who or which departments are involved with the World Economic Forum platform meetings? Africa trades heavily. The president mentioned this in one of his addresses last year, and I'm not sure if it was the phone address or one of his other addresses, but Africa trades heavily with countries from the north. And the president mentioned that if we could just get a fraction of that particular trade, it would increase our GDP by about 2 to 3-4%. So what are the practical plans currently in place to make this happen via the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement? And then my last question is with regards to our exporting of the raw minerals and so on. So we rely heavily on gold, platinum, and coal exports for some 10% of our GDP. At the same time, those particular resources are depreciating or declining because they are not finite. But we still have some $3 to $5 trillion worth of untapped minerals. And that's a huge amount of potential to leverage and to build the economy. So what plans are in place with our sister departments like mining and energy to drive up exploration and junior development to spark entrepreneurship, which simultaneously can also help drive and influence beneficiation and localization in South Africa? Thank you, Chair.
Let me check, Honorable Secretariat, there was are there other hands?
Chair, there are other hands.
Yes.
Mr. Mbuyani, Chair, followed by Mr. Kamashin, Chair.
Because after Honorable Tring, there was someone else as well. Unmute.
Sorry, apologies, Chair, Mr. Burns.
Yeah. So now it's Mbuyane.
There's two hands, Chair. And
yeah.
Mr. Burns, Kamashe, Chair.
Okay. Burns, Kamashe. Mbuyane will be the next, Honorable Mbuyane, and then next is Honorable Burns, Kamashe. Mbuyane.
Chairperson, good morning, and good morning to the Minister. Welcome the presentation. I think it's eye-opening, it's broad, but I just have a few clarity-seeking questions. One, let me start by opportunities through FTA agreement on transformation. Which are those in terms of those opportunities through FTA after agreement for transformational agenda? Then the other one will be a question of strategic localization plan for the 42 products to be designated. I'm not so sure which are those specifically, Chair. Chair, I'm checking in terms of progress report and also implementation plan of the Nkomas SEZ and the Mosina Mokado, because now we're talking of Pretoria, Durban, and so ever, these two rural SEZ are not taken care of, Chair, in terms of the progress report. Let us get from the Minister as to what is happening in these two rural SEZ program. Thank you. Then, and also the Township and Rural Economy Development Plan that seeks to direct deal with the district development model. I just want to check whether you have any export plan that is around the district development model that the minister has spoken to. And also the last one, I think the minister has alluded to the issues of online registration with the CIPC and also ease of doing business. But I just want to check in terms of the department. Do you have any program that seeks to have any minimum number that they want in terms of budget quota to say, in terms of all these 9 provinces, they just want to see happening in 3 days or in 3 and few months? The plan in terms of the development, while if they are doing ease or doing business, because some other provinces do have these departments, but they're not linked to the CIPC. So I just want to check, if you want to do the business, you must go to Pretoria, or you access any portal around any provinces that you allocated. Let me pause now, there for now, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Honorable Benz Namasha.
Thank you very much, Chair. And greetings to the Honorable Minister. Chair, I think 2 members have made reference to the district development model, which I think is at the center of coordination in terms of coherence and impactful interventions by government. Now it's equally more of trying to get a sense in terms of how, as a department, there is a plan that seeks to zoom into that space so as to ensure that as government we move towards one direction in terms of integration and alignment of programs. Then the second question, Chair, it seeks to look at the role that the department would play in ensuring that other sectors which have a direct impact in terms of its core mandate. For instance, let's take for an example the issue around your clothing and textile as part of the master plans. Obviously, as part of the broader value chain, one would be interested in how we source cotton at a primary production level, because the impact of our capacity to revitalize manufacturing, among other things, will also be dependent on on where we source those products or commodities that actually which are of high value, which really make and give an impetus into the manufacturing plan the various segments of the value chain. But critical to the question I'm trying to get at is, for instance, South Africa is endowed with plenty of land that is lying fallow, especially in rural areas. And part of the challenges that discourages investment is because of the lack of security of tenure. Now, if you look at it at this point, we aim at creating industrialists. Now, if we are to create industrialists, for instance, on the clothing and textile, it would be important to see how we stimulate the local production, for instance, of cotton. And if we are to focus at that, then, as the minister has said, we work with other sister departments. Now, to what extent, as the department, especially being the catalyst of the macro industrial strategy, to what extent has the department managed to influence at the level of policy and legislation that, for instance, the Department of Land Affairs accelerate the security of tenure legislation so as to ensure that rural communities with secured tenure system are able to participate in the mainstream economy that forms part of the broader macro industrial strategy. So these are the questions that I have, Chair, which I think that for now that should be enough. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Let's check if there are any further comments, questions for clarity, Secretariat. If not,
we have Mr. Jacobs, Chair from the Small Business Committee, Chair.
Mr. Jacobs.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings. Just one quick question, Minister. It relates to district and metro-based economic planning. I think in the past we had growth summits, economic development summits in the past. Is it something that your department will consider? I think there's a lot of good work happening and your department needs to be commended for the industrialization plan. But the challenge is that we're not feeling it in the local spaces of the metro and the district. So is there an intention for your department to bring it down to a district planning-based, metro plan-based economic planning? If so, please share your thoughts.
Okay. So let's actually then check. I'm sure we have covered most of the members who wanted to comment or ask questions. Secretariat, maybe we can go back to the minister and the team.
That's correct, Chair. No further questions.
Okay. Let me ask Minister if ever you can actually be able to actually then also align your team for further feedback or response to the question. Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm certainly going to be needing both the DG and Deputy Minister to come in as appropriate. But first, I'd like to thank all the members for the questions that have been posed, and I'd like to
respond to the questions perhaps in the sequence that they were asked. Starting with Honorable Mulder's question. The first part is conceptual, where Honorable Mulder raises the issue whether the four priorities are all what he calls business related, which I understand to be an focused on providing conditions for the growth of the economy. And to the extent that I've understood that to be what Honorable Mulder means by business related, then I would want to say that all four of these areas, while they deal with different aspects of South Africa's challenge, all of them to a greater or lesser extent can have a positive impact on the business environment, and conversely, if we don't get them right, they can also have a negative impact on the business environment. So COVID-19 is fundamentally a health challenge, but it's a health challenge that has resulted in very, very dramatic economic consequences. And if we take something as like the vaccine, within government we see the vaccine to be in the first instance a health response, but in the second instance a critical element of dealing with the economic issues, because as more South Africans become vaccined, it provides an opportunity for a stronger resumption of economic activities, will boost confidence, it will make travel easier, so the tourism industry will benefit. So it is, I think Honorable Mulder is right that it is a health one in the first instance, but I want to contend that in line with government thinking across the world, all governments now are seeing that these measures, health measures, are quite fundamental, have quite fundamental economic consequences. The economic recovery, of course, Honorable Mulder sees as very business related, and I agree with him. And on the economic reforms, it is true that these ones will be carried out across government. It's not ones that is specific to the DTIC, but they do open up business opportunities enormously. Let me take the example of the energy reforms. That if we can successfully implement a stronger renewable energy program with a greater number of players entering the market, providing decentralized energy generation, we expand the supply of energy in the country, which has a very, very direct economic impact. As we get to spectrum release, we will stimulate the ICT investment. So those are very strongly correlated to the economy, perhaps as strongly as the economic reconstruction and recovery measures. And then fighting corruption, of course, is corruption is a drag on economic growth and economic performance, and successes in fighting corruption has a positive economic impact. But the president also referred under the heading of fighting corruption, he also had strengthening the capacity of the state. And what we've seen increasingly from the lessons of highly successful economies that have been able to industrialize fast is state capability is absolutely critical. That markets are needed, you need the dynamism of markets and the opportunity for entrepreneurs, but the state is also a quite critical partner in creating enabling conditions, in nurturing and supporting. And so all four of these areas, Honorable Mulder, to greater or lesser extents, but all of them, I believe, would be will have and can have a positive impact on economic performance. Honorable Mulder raises an interesting question which is picked up by one of the other honorable members, and that is how does one deal with a challenge where you have fiscal constraints, so you have a decrease in your budget of your original baseline, but you have to do many things.
And I think fresh thinking is required. And it just so happens that over the last 2 years, we have been thinking in fresh and new ways. Now, if I may, before elaborating on that, if I can connect that to a comment made by Honorable Yako, who said, she cautions, if I understand it, and I think rightly, that we should not, she says, we tend to move from what we're doing to something else, that we're constantly jumping. I see that as an important caution. So we need fresh thinking, but successful implementation means not jumping each time you have a headwind or a difficult set of circumstances. It means knuckling down and doing the hard, detailed, very often quite boring work of implementation. And obviously, a public commentator who writes an article in the newspaper is looking for a fresh headline. But government is not in the business of generating a fresh headline. We've got to make sure that if we said we're going to do something, that you stay focused on it and you carry it out, and you will hit problems and obstacles, and you find ways of overcoming that. So how do I square that circle with what I think is the positive comment made by Honorable Mulder, that one needs fresh thinking? And the fresh thinking comes from the partnership opportunities that we've identified. 5 years ago, a plan within government would typically be something where government would get together all the experts in the public sector. We would get consultants employed. Those consultants would do very thick documents. The staff would go through it. They would prepare a report for a minister. A minister would then make the final decision on what are the key elements of a plan, and a plan would be released. Let's call that the traditional way of policy making. And the fresh approach, the new approach, is to bring people into the discussion, to say if we are going to change the poultry industry or the clothing industry, we do it by taking the knowledge and information and expertise and know-how and insights of that sector itself. And yes, of course, we will bring independent research to it. Yes, of course, our public servants will bring the broader perspective that participants in a sector may not be able to focus on. But by marrying what the public sector can bring with what the private sector and other stakeholders like the labor movement and others can bring into the equation, it's a new way of policy making. It's a fresh break from how policy making was done historically. And that approach has actually helped us in some of the master plans. So we may need to do even more of those kind of things, Honorable Mulder, recognizing that with a decrease in the budget, you don't have as much public resources you can give. You now need partnerships. So let me give an example of what it means practically. We sit down with a big beverage player, and the beverage industry is a huge user of sugar. They need to have a set of public interest conditions for a merger that they put in place. Instead of us leaving it to government to sort out how to support farmers in sugar production, we sit down with this beverage maker, who then agrees that they will do two things. Number one, they will localize more of their sugar. So they committed that they will work to achieving at least 80% localization of sugar, and then over the next number of years, increasing it further. But we also need to make space for small-scale black farmers, because we need to build inclusive economies where all South Africans see opportunity. So that same beverage maker then, in a revised agreement after we had sat down with it towards the end of last year, it was announced and approved by the Competition Tribunal now in February, that that beverage maker will also work with the big sugar mills to ensure that at least 30% of the sugar that is used come from small-scale farmers, people in, let's say, the Makatini Flats area. Small-scale farmers would typically have found their routes to market constrained and choked off will now have a big player that has a competition contractual commitment to help open up that pipeline and increase the supply of sugar. Now, the example I'm giving illustrates a new approach. In the old days, it would have been government simply relying on public sector instruments. Now it is negotiating and understanding an agreement and then getting the necessary authorities to sign off on it to make sure that it meets the public interest. And more of that innovation is what will be required in future, Honorable Mulder. So thank you for drawing attention to what I think is the right thing, which is in a crisis, think in fresh ways about how to achieve the outcomes that you need to achieve. Honorable McPherson has made asked a few questions and has made some observations. The first area that Honorable McPherson raises is the need to ensure that we move the needle. And I agree that the needle has to be moved, but it is making sure that we're doing the right things, that we're getting outcomes and then scaling them up. And in the face of a challenge and a difficulty, it's my earlier remark, knuckle down, solve the problems. We can't find a sound bite for each problem. We need to find a solution. And that's the difference that we're focusing on now, is to solve the underlying problems that constrain progress. Those that are, of course, within our power to do. Honorable McPherson says government and the DTIC should stop doing things in the old ways. I have responded to what I think was a more positive way in which Honorable Mulder has raised the question, and I can't really add to that. On the dogma of consensus, there's two ways of viewing the world. The one way is that government must set out a set of propositions, tackle all those interest groups that Honorable McPherson refers to, and go into battle. We have a different approach. It's an approach that has the support of the majority of South Africans, because it's a vision that was embedded in the manifesto of the ruling party. It was put to the South African public in 2019, and it scored significantly better electoral success than the competing stall that Honorable McPherson represents. And what that vision is to build social pacts. And social pacts are about bringing business, labor, and government together on a growth agenda and on a transformation agenda. So I would point to the different master plans as examples of how we're getting it right. And what we now need to do is scale them up. So we won't solve the entire challenge of agro-processing only with the changes in poultry. It will need that to be replicated in many, many more sectors. So now Minister Didiza has taken the learnings from the poultry and sugar master plans, and she's working with the agricultural sector on an agriculture and agro-processing master plan. So I do think that there is value in getting the micro right and then scaling it up. So we build that consensus. Consensus doesn't mean always agreeing with everything that one of the partners wants. It means some tough choices. In the clothing and textile master plan, we raised quite sharply with the retail sector the need for localization. We raised quite sharply with the manufacturers the need for more investment, and with the labor movement for collective bargaining agreements that are more calibrated to the production cycles of the industry. And industry raised with us correctly, quite sharply, the need for stronger action by government to deal with illegal imports and under-invoicing.
So each party also raises the difficult issues, and then we see in the process of implementation, it's about checking whether each of us are bringing our bit to make that sector work and go forward. And that really is the heart of a social pact approach, as opposed to one that says we'll just do battle with all these interest groups that we disagree with. I recognize Honorable McPherson is entitled to his point of view, but it's not the point of view that has won the support in the election, and so this government is focused on promoting a greater level of social pacting. On power generation, Honorable McPherson raises the issue of localization. And yeah, I think it's one has to find a balanced approach. I do agree with the need to move with speed, but the balanced approach is if we are going to put enormous resources into the green economy, we do need to ensure that South Africa doesn't become simply an importer of green technologies and green components. And at the end of the day, we have a lower aggregate employment base. When you look at solar and wind generation plants as an example, on a like-for-like basis, they are less labor-intensive because basically nature does the hard work. You don't need these massive furnace-like things to convert coal into energy. The sun does that by reflecting off mirrors. The wind does it by turning the wind turbines and so on. So nature steps in. But where the employment opportunity is in the supplier industries, in making sure that we do in fact have the capability to make those mirrors and those turbines and so on. And we believe South Africa has the scientific, technological, and ingenuity base to be able to do that. So it's about finding the right balance between these two things. And I'm happy to indicate that we have in fact published in February in the Government Gazette an arrangement or using the provisions of the BEE Act. We've given the Department of Energy more flexibility around the mitigation program on renewable energy, and the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy is now working to see how there can be even deeper localization of the components. Honorable McPherson mischaracterizes the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan. He believes that the plan is based on the mantra, create demand and production will follow. Well, I would urge Honorable McPherson to reread the plan, to see that the plan has what very simply we can call a set of supply-side interventions and a set of demand-side interventions. Demand-side interventions are things that help to restore consumer confidence, that provides more money in the hands of consumers so that there's a pull in the market, that people want to buy more clothes or more food or pay for transport. Those things provide the market. All economics is based on a careful mix between demand and supply side interventions. On the supply side, the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan identifies a range of those supply side issues. Let me just take one as an example, and that is the importance of investment. It deals with it by talking through the importance of investment, the kind of economic reforms that are required that can unlock investment. I gave the example earlier of reforms that take place in energy or in telecommunications, unlock investment, and that is a supply side measure. But it also talks about the master plans, which deals with the issues of the efficiency of industry and how to build more dynamic industries. And there are many, many other examples like that, but I quote that one to illustrate the fact that the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan deals with both sides of that equation. On the master plans itself, Honorable McPherson has concerns in two areas. The first is in the steel industry, and the critique is that government seeks to concentrate supply in a few hands and is acting as the supporter of ArcelorMittal, who is the single biggest beneficiary. It is, I hope to have an opportunity to come to the portfolio committee as soon as the steel master plan has gone through its final process. The various constituents have confirmed that they support the master plan frame, and we're now putting together the last bit of work before the public release of the steel master plan. In that steel master plan, it's a careful balance between the need to do three things. Number one, to have a primary steel industry, to be able to produce steel. Africa has 17% of the world's population and only 1% of the world's steel production. And we saw significant disruptions in supply chains during COVID-19. We need as a continent to break with the idea that we are dependent on getting supply of critical raw materials, because steel is one of those things that is absolutely critical throughout the whole economy. It's not just one sector, it's the entire economy that is affected by steel. Now, it's a choice that one needs to make, whether to have a steel industry or whether to simply be purchasers of steel from others, and be subject to the vagaries of the global market and the challenges of supply disruption. We believe that there's a compelling economic and strategic case if we want to build a resilient economy to have primary steel production. I seem to recall that it's a view that is not without its support elsewhere. When Saldanha Steel closed in the Western Cape, there was a very strong call from the Western Cape government on national government to try to help Saldanha Steel, which is owned by ArcelorMittal, I should say. So one mustn't hunt with the lions and run with the deer at the same time. We do need a primary steel industry. We are concerned about the practices of ArcelorMittal. I have said that publicly. We launched a competition probe into ArcelorMittal, and they paid what was the country's highest penalty, 1.5 billion rand, for certain practices. And I believe that the steel master plan will be a careful balance between trying to maintain a primary steel making capacity, supporting downstream steel, because that's where innovation, customization, and differentiation take place. So there's important opportunities there for South African manufacturers to come in, and we do need to ensure that there is more competition to ArcelorMittal upstream as we strengthen the downstream industry. And the third leg is to build new supply and value chains, and we're talking now to other sectors to use South African-made steel to a greater extent, which will, of course, develop new businesses. And those are the kind of things that we hope the steel master plan can help to find the right balance between these competing industries. Some people have said, abandon your sugar industry because the large moles dominate it. But we recognize many rural communities are absolutely dependent on the sugar production. And I know that Honorable McPherson has in the past called on us to take steps to try to support sugar production and the sugar industry. But I've heard the same argument that Honorable McPherson makes about steel. I've heard from people who use sugar who say, why don't we just import sugar? And we simply make the foodstuffs with imported sugar. But it will be devastating in the KwaZulu-Natal area and in Mpumalanga. And so we find that careful balance.
So what Honorable McPherson preaches in one sector, government practices in all sectors, which is to find that careful and right balance between upstream and downstream. Now, it is true, and I'll make this point and I'll underline this point. It is true that you can have capture where an upstream industry can increase prices and ensure that benefits flow disproportionately to them. And that's where competition policies need to be vigilant, and we need to watch carefully the pricing practices of sectors. Similarly, Honorable McPherson is concerned about the poultry industry, and he says there are multi-billion rand businesses on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And I want to make two connected points. The one point is, I don't think that the fact that a business is a large business is a bad thing for South Africa. You need scale in the global economy. You need, every economy needs large businesses, businesses that can be significant global players, that can export in huge quantity, that can get the economies of scale to keep prices low, that can invest in R&D. China, Germany, Malaysia, United States, pick a country, you'll see that they have large businesses and they have small businesses. So we should not get to the point of attacking something simply because it's large. Where the challenge comes in, and this is my second point, is that large businesses, when they are dominant, when their market shares are huge, very often act in a manner to exclude small businesses, to sew up the market, to limit entry for black South Africans, for young people, for women. And our job is to focus with laser sharpness on those instances and take action where that happens. So if I use the poultry industry as an example, those very large businesses now have very sharp commitments that they need to comply with on building supply chains to give opportunities to black South Africans in larger numbers. And there was a very touching letter to the editor the other day in one of the business publications from a black South African woman who is in the poultry industry. Her name is Beverly Mshlabani, and she's from Benoni. She's a poultry farmer, and she has about 6,500 hens that has been part of an egg business. And we're wanting her to, she wants to move into broiler production, the cultivation of chickens for, as a source of meat, not only as eggs, so that she has a more diversified business, so that she moves from tiny to being more of a player in the industry. And we're using the master plan and these large businesses to ensure that they generate the resources to help scale up the capabilities and capacities of Ms. Mshlabani as one example of many. And so building a strong a black farming community, a small farming, a small-scale farming community in poultry is one of the objectives of the master plan. But we also want to celebrate that today, Honorable McPherson, there is more than a million additional chickens, extra chickens that are produced every week here in South Africa, employing South African workers whose only source of income is the work that they do, either as a small entrepreneur or as a worker in the poultry industry. Celebrate that with us next time we have something to eat, and it's a locally grown chicken. So I wanted to say that in all of the master plans, our job is not to say break down and destroy large businesses. That's not the attitude of this government. It is to say we want to support a move to a greater number of small businesses, more medium-sized businesses, more youth-owned businesses, because we've seen that that's the missing part of our equation, that we don't have that on scale, and we need to do more of that. the Honourable McPherson also raises the same concern that is raised previously on BEE, that there's no meaningful desire in the plan or in BEE to support broader empowerment. And I simply cite the very examples that I gave in my introductory comments. Coca-Cola, there are now 8,000 workers there that will own 15% of the shares of that company. The Simba Chips Pioneer Foods merger, there will be 12,000 workers there that will own about 13% of that company. And there are other examples of these. I can give examples as I did in the portfolio committee, where I took the portfolio committee through, if I recall, more than 100, perhaps more than 150 examples of black South Africans, female South Africans, young South Africans who were benefiting from the IDC measures, the NEF measures, the DTIC, or the competition interventions. Those are real examples. Those are examples. Now, it is true that there are some people who exploit BEE. We use that as a cover to get unfair and unearned advantage. Isolate those examples. Let's criticize those. Let's deal with it where they've broken the law and they do fronting and so on. Let's act against them. But let's not take transformation, which is a national imperative, and broad brushes with the scandals of a few of these examples. Let's recognize there are many, many black South Africans who are doing their very best, working very hard to build this economy, create jobs. There are many white South Africans who are doing the same thing. And this, and we should be bringing in even more young people, even more black South Africans to build the economy so that we become the strong economy that all of us want to be. Honorable Hermans, thank you for your comments. You've raised a question that has been picked up by a number of members, including Honorable Tring and Honorable Mbuyani, as well as Honorable Burns and Kamashi. And that is the question of how the DTIC works with other departments. I have plenty of examples, and the DG has a number of examples that I'm going to also ask him just to share maybe two or three of those. But before sharing it, of course, every department has the mandate in their particular legislation, and they have the budget resources. So the DTIC is not a super department that instructs others. We work in partnership with others. Take energy as an example. We work with the Department of Energy on a number of projects. One of it is the renewable energy program, where I indicated that we facilitated, we made it easier for Minister Mantashe to go through with the public call for proposals, and the work that that we've published on the 12th of February this year is an example of it. But we also work with the department on localization and on the mineral side, trying to find ways in which we can strengthen beneficiation. Honorable Tring would be interested to know that we worked with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy in a competition matter that has now resulted in a particular mineral being available for local industry rather than it being simply shipped from the mining pit to the port in a raw form to be taken in this particular instance to China. So those are the kind of examples. With the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development, Land Reform, we work with them on the poultry master plan, the sugar master plan. We're working with them now on what is called SPS, which is sanitary and phytosanitary standards that would allow more South African companies to export agricultural products. We've helped, we've worked in partnership on the export of citrus, where we raise with trade ministers elsewhere in the world the obstacles and challenges with getting South African citrus into other markets, and we've made some good progress in a number of instances, and it's off the back of that that citrus production has been expanding and citrus exports has been increasing.
departments, arts and culture was an example that Honorable Yaakov may have raised it to ask how do we work with arts and culture. Well, there's a few instances I want to cite, perhaps just one or two. The one is in film production, that we make available a resource through the DTIC and through the IDC to foster a South African film industry that has two legs to it. The one leg is indigenous film. In other words, film that is written, produced, directed, and filmed here in South Africa. And one example of that was Tsotsi as an award-winning example. There are many others. I've provided the committee in the past with a set of examples of those kind of ones. Some of them also deal with our history. For example, there was a documentary, drama documentary, on the life and times of Solomon Mahlangu that was produced, where it had the backing of government, and it's one that's available on Netflix, and I don't want to advertise any one company, but I would urge members of parliament who have not seen it yet to look at the documentary, and there are many other South African ones like that. There are ones that uses Afrikaans as the medium of communication in the movie. There are others using indigenous languages and so on. The second part of it is for South Africa to be a location for global filmmaking. And we have had some very significant movies, Hollywood movies, made in South Africa where the economic value add in South Africa is quite significant. Sets are built here, costumes are designed and made here, food is procured here, the actor stays in hotels here, South Africa's landscape is transmitted to the rest of the world. So those would be the kind of examples that we work together with arts and culture. Another example would be on the copyright legislation, which is currently serving before the portfolio committee to make sure that we have in future a system that protects performers with royalties and find the right balance between public interest and copyright ownership. So those would be examples, and I could take many different parts of government and do an example of how we work with departments. With the Department of Tourism, for example, our work is very often in funding and financing the growth of hotels and bed and breakfasts and those kind of places through the IDC, and that then supports the growth of the tourism sector with example that I can give of let me just take one last one, the communications department dealing with postal services and telecoms. Our work on competition has been critical in supporting the efforts of that department to bring data prices down. Of course, one of the big issues that we have to focus on now is energy prices. It's both the availability of energy, the reliability of that supply, but critically the price of energy. And this is a difficult one. And so we've had some initiatives with both public enterprises as well as minerals to try to address the pricing challenges of energy. Finally, on examples of working with other departments is greening the economy. It is something that the mandate sits in many different departments, and the DTIC can play its role in it, and we're doing more work on that. Some of it I would hope to have an opportunity to announce when we have the budget vote, and others that have already come up in SONA. Honorable Hermans, you're absolutely right about the symbiotic relationship, that in the economy you can't have 10 ministries all going in their own direction and have a proper outcome. It's about the connection between them. And you raise correctly, I think, the
the issue of manufacturing, which must be at the heart of our work. So let me use that as an example. Manufacturing has challenges, cost structure challenges, energy prices, those kind of things. But it also has a challenge of innovation, that the world wants new products all the time. And the work we do, and I gave the example previously in the committee of the CPAP ventilators, where 20,000 of those units were produced in South Africa and used widely during particularly the surge, the second surge of the infection. And that was using South African innovation and talent. Now, the question is how to do that on scale in many other products. And that's an area where we would work with the Minister of Science and Innovation. Honorable Yako has raised the question of that more successes are needed, and that we need to show over the period of the next 12 months where we expect that. I think it's a fair expectation, Honorable Yako, and it's one that will be outlined, traditionally it's outlined in the budget vote where ministries then indicate the areas, having done the preparatory work with the annual performance plan and so on, they indicate where that will be, and certainly I think we take that as an important area. On special economic zones, Honorable Yaka asks a good question. How do we get more? And in the remark that I quoted saying that we tend to move from what we're doing to something else, previously the special economic zone policy was based on provinces initiate a special economic zone. National government has had a very limited role. Our role was, number one, to receive an application. Number two, to check it against a set of boxes, tick the boxes. It meets this, it meets that, it meets that. Number three, if it meets all of that, to designate it. And number four, if after it's been designated, to provide some resources to that special economic zone for infrastructure. That was the only role of government. And so what it created was provinces lobbied strongly for special economic zones. Having lobbied the provinces then, the minute all the boxes are ticked, they would run the special economic zone, and at best national government may have one person on the board who sits there to just ensure that the governance is okay and that the money is used for the intended purposes. Now, that model did have some progress and some positive outcomes, but it was relatively slow. It took us a long time to move Kucha from a concept with a small number of tenants to something where it now has quite significant investment. It has a major anchor tenant, and it is able to now use its expertise to help SEZs elsewhere in the country, and in fact, even elsewhere on the African continent. So what we've done is we've now shifted the focus quite dramatically. And instead of wanting more SEZs, we're saying we're not there, it mustn't be a factory to produce more special economic zone designations. It's not more ribbon-cutting opportunities for a premier and a minister to cut a ribbon and say we've got a new special economic zone and you just see open land for many years. The new approach is one where, which Cabinet has discussed and approved, and we've experimented with it in the Tshwane Special Economic Zone, and it's one where national government is a strong and active partner with at least one third of the board seats, with a very strong role in helping to attract investors, in ensuring a viable and appropriate business plan, in unblocking and opening up opportunities for a special economic zone, and one in which we say the municipality must put something on the table,
provinces must and national government must, and we manage the relationship carefully through that. That's the new approach. With strong professional managers to run the special economic zone. Now, what has been missing as one more element that's required is having the capacity in national government to be able to do this for more than one special economic zone. We were able to do it for Tswane, and we're now building that capability in the Industrial Development Corporation, the IDC. There will be a unit that the DTIC will be housing in the IDC. We will be making announcements on personnel quite soon, and we're looking to have very experienced people with deep knowledge of both policy and implementation that can work in that unit and are able to ensure that we now go back, Honorable Yako, beyond our current successes of Kucha, Tswane, and to some extent Dube, and East London, and so on, and we make those services available more generally. We go back to exactly the kind of special economic zones that you've raised the question, and to see how can we support them now. So instead of many new special economic zones, is to see can we strengthen the existing ones, and can we have new ones where we can really see a strong value proposition and a capability to carry it out completely. If we don't do that, it means we get a small return for our investment. So we need to up our return. Going back to Honorable Mulder's question, that we need to think in fresh and new ways about how to do things. Honorable Yako also finally asked the question on how can the IDC and the NEF get their monies back from small businesses, the monies that were made available. Now, some support last year were in the form of grants. So those were to try to tide businesses over during the difficult period. Others are in the form of loans, and those loans need to be repaid. But I would hope that both the IDC and the NEF will take into account that businesses' ability to repay will, of course, be affected by the pace of economic recovery. The faster the economy recovers, the greater the ability to repay, and so we want to work more carefully with those entities. The IDC in particular has faced a challenge that we've needed to deal with, and that is the IDC receives no money for its core mandate from government. It manages some funds for certain departments, but that's a very small part of the overall financial flows in the IDC. The IDC has not received a capital injection from government probably since perhaps the 1960s or 1950s. So it has to use its portfolio to generate resources to pay for all the support it renders. And we are looking to see how can we get every rand of the IDC and NEF to stretch further by combining it with the rand that the DTIC brings. Because the DTIC money comes every year as fresh money. But the IDC money is off the base of their balance sheet. So in this new financial year, it's going to be a greater integration of this. I spoke last year to say we were doing work on that. This year, we in the new financial year, we want to be able to implement that initially in pilot form. And as we learn, we can scale up. Honorable Tring, on your question of how we work with infrastructure, so there are two ways. The one is to work with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and the second is to work with the office in the presidency for infrastructure investment. So I've worked with the Ministry of Public Works and Infrastructure in identifying products that can be localized in South Africa's infrastructure program. And an obvious example is something like cement, to see how can we get more locally produce cement used in infrastructure. And in the case of the investment, infrastructure investment office in the presidency, it's really to help identify projects which, if they are implemented, helps to unlock industrial development. Let me give perhaps a good example of this. We launched the Suwane Special Economic Zone. Off the back of that, the Ford Motor Company agrees that they will put 16 billion rands worth of fresh investment in South Africa. They then say they will increase the capacity of Ford to produce vehicles up to 200,000 vehicles a year. So it will take a couple of years for them to fully tool up, but we expect by next year that they already would make significant progress with opening new parts of the factory that would enable greater vehicle production. Now that's great, but the problem is you've got more vehicles being produced in Gauteng, and not all of them are sold in South Africa or in immediate neighboring countries. We want to export that to Europe, to the Americas, to Asia and elsewhere. As in fact, Ford is already exporting quite a lot of its Ranger bucket from South Africa to other parts of the world. So now Ford has hit an infrastructure problem. The infrastructure problem is if they ramp up production, they're not going to be able to move those vehicles as quickly to ports, because up to now, most of those vehicles have been exported from the port of Durban. So what we're now working with Transnet and the Ministry of Public Enterprises and the Office of the Presidency dealing with infrastructure investment is getting a project where Transnet is now considering a major investment on the rail line from Gauteng to the Eastern Cape, which would enable us to turn the PE Kuga area into a major export hub for motor vehicles. So there will be some consolidation between the port of Nelson Mandela Bay and the port of Kuga, and then one of them would be the major one for the export of vehicles. But that costs a lot of money. It will cost many billions of rands to be able to upgrade that rail line to be secure and to be a modern line. So now the work is being done on the business case and raising the money for that. So that, I think, give a good example of industrialization. And we hope through the work we're doing now with the Steel Master Plan that with time, more of the Ford Ranger Bucky will use local steel, which is then the beneficiation of local iron ore. So you can then see the beginning of a stronger value chain where South African iron ore can be converted to steel, can be converted to vehicles, and then used both in South Africa and exported to the rest of the African continent. So if we want to sell vehicles in Egypt or in Nigeria, they go immediately from our ports by ship to other destinations. So it's begin to integrate your beneficiation strategy, your auto master plan, your infrastructure program, and the African continental free trade opportunity. They now, all the connection between these different ones starts to kick in. On the plan around special economic zones, Honorable Tring, as I've indicated in the work that we're doing now, it's building that unit in the IDC, and that will then help us to do more of what we've done in Tswane. And I know DG October would want to comment on one or two aspects of that. The list of minerals we're exporting rather than beneficiating locally. Well, we did, it's an important area of work, and for that reason the DG provided some information to the committee on the different areas of work we're doing on beneficiation and appointed
to the factory now in Dube Trade Port that is using South African minerals in the production of the products there. But in addition to that, steel is an important area, and so what we're doing on the steel master plan on scrap metal is critical in strengthening the export of finished goods rather than the export of raw materials. And that product, that project that DG October was speaking about in the Dube trade port, it's ultimately about the production of fuel cells. So not only do we use South African palladium and platinum, but it will also help with strengthening efforts to green our economy. And again, I draw the connection, the integration of multiple objectives, that it's about beneficiation, but it's also about greening, which allows me to make the point that localization is also an important way of greening the economy. Instead of goods moving by ship and massive emission, if we produce more in South Africa, we produce more locally, we are able through those efforts to cut down on carbon emission. Just moving from that area to the master plans, we will be again in the, it's a good question, Honorable Pring, and so both the furniture and steel master plan, we're doing quite hard work now in finishing these, and we will then announce in the budget vote what would be the next sector where we will be doing a master plan. On World Economic Forum, the World Economic Forum is not a decision-making body. It started off in the early 1970s as an initiative by a Swiss academic, Professor Klaus Schwab, and he wanted to create a forum where business and government could get together on a regular basis and exchange ideas. It's grown over the years. It eventually became an annual event in Davos, which is a tiny village in Switzerland, and then they have what they call the summer Davos, which is a World Economic Forum event in China, and there's been also regional events. Cape Town has hosted the Africa World Economic Forum. And what the forum is, it's a series of opportunities for business leaders and government leaders to speak to each other, both through set-piece activities like a speech that, say, Chancellor Merkel or President Ramaphosa would make to 1,000 people, as well as interactive panel discussions where we may take the steel industry, we may have two or three industrialists from the steel industry, we may have one or two steel ministers there, and they would have a dialogue in front of other people. Two bilateral meetings where you can meet one-on-one with an investor. They can say, look, these are the problems in your country. How is South Africa participating in the World Economic Forum? Typically, the president leads the delegation to the meetings annually. This year, the meeting was suspended as a physical meeting, so there was a virtual engagement, and there's still a hope by the World Economic Forum that they may be able to have a sit-down physical meeting before the end of the year, but it depends on what happens with the virus and the success we're all looking to for the vaccine rollout. Now, there would then be a few ministers that participate. Typically, it would be the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, and then there would be other ministers depending on the agenda. Sometimes the Minister of Health would come when the themes in Davos deal with health issues, or the Minister for Mineral Resources may come when there's a particularly important investment initiative that is being discussed there. The outcomes of the World Economic Forum are insights and sometimes bilateral agreements. So we may reach an agreement with an investor in Davos, and they would then send a technical technical team to South Africa and engage further with us and make an announcement thereafter. On the Africa Continental Free Trade Area question, by Honorable Tring, the plans come in three broad categories. The first one is the trade negotiations, and there we've now secured a commitment to more than 80% of all the tariff lines. We now have agreed rules of origin. In other words, all countries agree what is the level of local production before a good can a commodity can qualify as locally produced. We want to up that further. We want to work on services, and then we want to have an engagement on investment policy, on intellectual property, and on competition. So that's the one leg. The second leg is industrialization. In other words, pushing the export opportunities for South African companies. And we've started now with the auto sector, looking at what we can do to create greater auto market on the African continent. And we're doing it now in other sectors too. And if I can connect Honorable Tring's question to Honorable Mbuyane's question, because they nicely fit together. Honorable Mbuyane asked, what are the opportunities in the transformation space for the Continental Free Trade Area? And it's an opportunity for South African businesses, youth-owned, women-owned, black-owned businesses, to expand their market beyond South Africa. So, for example, an entrepreneur called Tami Kowa makes these cooler boxes that you can buy at Game and at some of the other mass mart stores like Macro and so on. Working with the company, they now are able to export those cooler boxes to Mozambique. So in that case, a black South African industrialist, a black industrialist, is able to expand beyond the South African market. Or Zanele Sibande makes these doors, the hollow core internal doors, not the external doors that are the solid timber, but the ones that are often used in low-cost housing for internal doors. She's now been able to get those doors exported to Botswana, so it enlarges her market. Or Sibusiso Mapatiani, who owns a foundry in Gauteng. One of the things he does in the foundry, he uses scrap metal and he makes train brake shoes that typically was bought by Transnet. But now he's selling some of those shoes to Zimbabwe. Or Nsiki Biela, who is a winemaker in the Western Cape, and she's an award-winning winemaker, by the way. She now sells not only in the South African market, but also she sells her products to Ghana. Or the Monsi family, who are in the business of machine cutting tools. So they've supplied South Africa, and they're now supplying a number of other African countries, including Mauritania. Now, these are examples of South Africans, black South Africans, who have seized the opportunity that there is in other African markets. How the African Continental Free Trade Area will help is that it will lower the tariffs in more countries, so it allows them to sell at a more competitive price to other African countries. And as they sell more, their own unit costs can come down. They can put a little bit of money away to develop new products, which is product innovation, and so they can build more viable businesses. If you only rely on the South African market and you have a small size of the market that you have available, you can easily be knocked out by economic crises, by global events, by pandemics, and so on. So you only build resilience if you diversify your market. So these are examples
of how that is being done. In addition to that, Honorable Mbuyane has asked a really interesting question that links in with the question raised by Honorable Jacobs. And that is, what about districts? Now, we've come up with a potentially bold idea, which I know will have many challenges in the implementation, and I'm going to ask the committee to bear with us, because we're not going to get it perfectly right the first time around, but it is a new approach that we tabled as DTIC to Cabinet in January, where all the provinces were present and SALGA representing local government was present. And the proposal that we had made at that meeting was that we should now get every district to have an export plan, based on the African Continental Free Trade Area. And that means that every district across the country must ask themselves one fundamental question. What do they do better than anyone else? Where is their comparative advantage in the language of economics that allows them to say, that's what we think if we build that capability? Maybe it's in agriculture. Maybe there are citrus farmers. Maybe it's in the production of beneficiated products, where they take something that South Africa produces, platinum, and they develop catalytic converters, which are attached to cars, and they want to export catalytic converters. Or perhaps it is suits that are made in South Africa in a particular district. Whatever it is, that you take a particular product or a set of products and you say, we're going to work with our local players to build their capacity and export increasingly. So with time, I've worked now with Deputy Minister Gina and Deputy Minister Majola, who will be leading the work of the ministry on this. Both deputy ministers will be reaching out to the different provinces in this financial year to start the process of getting an export plan at local level. Now, that, Honourable Jacobs, is the first concrete element of what we think can become a district and metro-based economic plan. So, of course, export is only one element of it. Localization similarly requires every district to say, what can we, and by the way, when I say localization, I mean the South African market. What can we as a district produce for South Africa that we can increasingly displace products that are made in China or India or European countries or United States or Brazil or wherever it may be? What do we do better than others? Or with the support of government, can we strengthen our capabilities? And so we making it very, very concrete, because we went previously the route where every district had in the old days the strategic plans. And typically what happened is they would bring a consultant in. The consultant would do 200 pages of beautiful macro statistics and local statistics and some very unrealistic ideas. The consultant would get paid. The municipality would print it in a beautiful format. Whenever we visit that municipality, we get their plan. But it's not one that's rooted in a very practical approach to say, in this year, what do we want to sell in the domestic market and what do we want to sell elsewhere in the world? And that's how many successful industrial districts, particularly in Italy, have industrialized over the years. So I hope that does answer the question of how we hope this will be implemented. We had the experience of COVID has sensitized us even more to the importance of the district development model.
On the question Honorable Mbuyane asked about the two SEZs, I'm going to ask if DG October could respond to those. And then on the question of the CIPC, the CIPC, the new portal called Biz Portal that they're developing is an opportunity to avoid businesses having to trek up to Pretoria. So now, provided you've got access to the internet, you can get the same services from the company registration part of the CIPC sitting in Lubala, in Lusikisiki, as you can sitting in Pretoria itself. So I hope that will give the kind of support to local players. Provinces, of course, can publicize these services and these multi-purpose centers that municipalities have can provide local entrepreneurs with access to a modem, access to a laptop and Wi-Fi so that they are able to utilize the resources. So that's how we're wanting to build it. Instead of taking Pretoria's expensive physical infrastructure and replicating it all over the country at a price that we can't afford, it's to use the new technologies to do so. And I appreciate Honorable Mbuyane's reference to that. Thank you on that. On strategic localization and working on the 42 products, we will be saying more about that when we have the budget vote, because the work is now being done to enable some further announcements on that. Honorable Burns Gamashe, I think, makes a really important point about integration and alignment of programs across the state. It's work in progress at the moment. We've made a lot of progress. I've given indications on energy, agriculture, manufacturing, arts and culture, infrastructure, and DG may want to give one or two other examples. Deputy Minister Majola, who's also on the platform, himself is also liaised with other departments and other spheres of government, and he has a really good sense also of how we're trying to develop integration, not just between departments, but also with provinces and then with municipalities, because he's responsible for our work on the MINMEX, and he may also want to make a few remarks on that. But I cannot but underline the importance of integration and alignment of projects. Finally, Honorable Burns Nkamashe raises the question of using South African raw material to do value chains. It's similar in concept to what Honorable Tring has raised around beneficiation and what Honorable Hermans has raised as the manufacturing value chains that we're trying to get. So they all speak to very similar concepts, and they are important. And I recognize, Honorable Burns Mamashi, that you've given cotton as an example. It's not the only example, but it is an important example. So what the DTIC has done is it's made a grant available over the last 5 years to the cotton industry, and the grant was just over 200 million rand, about 233 million rand, to help ensure that we support local cotton production. After the cotton has been produced, they go to what is called a gin, and then the ginnery process takes place, and then from there, of course, it goes into spinning and weaving. And we were advised that that initiative has helped create about 7,000 jobs, with a significant number of that being at farming level, and a number of them being black farmers, and that small businesses were also supported through that program. Now,
The other area that we have an opportunity, Honorable Burns Kamashi, is, of course, with wool. We are a very big exporter of raw wool. And getting the economics right in spinning and weaving is quite a challenge. And the textile industry has had a loss of production capacity in that area over the last 20, 25 years. So there are some efforts to see what can be done, but that's the difficult one. Basically, the raw material for clothing and textiles is either cotton, or it's wool, or it's a speciality wool like mohair, or it would be a synthetic product, or it would be a blend of these different ones. So you can go from your polyester to, there are also very specialist ones like bamboo fibers that are used to produce a particular look and feel of fabric. And South Africa wants to stay in the fabric business because it provides us with potential strong competitive advantage in these value chains. So the stimulation of local production, we can provide a bit more information to Honorable Burns and Kamashi on that program. On the security of tenure, it is an issue, as the Honorable Member will know, that my colleague, Minister Didiza, is working actively on, and is one that Cabinet, of course, is also aware of. So what our job is really to just support and help her and to ensure if there are any ways in which we can do more to do so that we help. Part of the connection with the DTIC is our program around supporting local farmers through competition measures. The agreements with PepsiCo, for example, the agreement with Coca-Cola are just two examples of these kind of things that has been done. There's also been other projects in the past that we've supported small-scale farmers, and security of tenure in parts of the country is an issue that needs to be resolved. So, Chairperson, I've tried to take a bit of time because we don't always have the opportunity to comprehensively respond because of the tyranny of the clock. With your permission, I wonder if we may have a few more minutes and ask if Deputy Minister Majola could have an opportunity, Chairperson, to also perhaps just illustrate through an example or two how we're seeking to integrate, and then if DG, who wasn't able to connect earlier, could speak to the special economic zones in the two rural areas, as well as perhaps supplement some of the responses that I have given. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay, let's agree, Minister, that let's get the Deputy Minister, let's get the DC, the DG in that order, and then we'll actually then come back to the members again. Thank you. Maybe get the Deputy Minister and the DG. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Now that I'm certain we have seen my face, maybe it will help if I speak without my video on.
No problem.
Just two things. I think Minister Patel has responded comprehensively to the questions and the comments of the honourable members. Just two matters that were raised by Honourable Mbuyani and Honourable Jacobs. The first one relates to the two SEZ in Homage, another one in Musino Makau. I must say that the Chairperson, we've been impacted quite seriously by COVID-19. So our work in especially these provinces has been affected by that. But I just want to indicate to Honorable Mbuyani that in the spirit of what Minister Patel was saying, with regard to our new approach to the development of SEZs, We're now intervening in Mosina Makado, and we have sent one of our Deputy Director General responsible for special development as part of our team into the Nkomazi SEZ so that we can ensure that we have scaled our work there. With regard to Mosina Makado, honorable members will know there's a complex set of challenges there in Mosina Makado. It is potentially one of our largest SEZ. One of the difficulties we have had there is the environmental challenges which have been raised by some of the environmental organizations there. So it is something that we're still working through, working with the different stakeholders and the province to see how far we can take our work there. Minister, on the matters relating to the district development model and the work we're doing with provinces, on Tuesday I did indicate to the members of the portfolio committee that during this week we will meet with the MECs of provinces to do what you were referring to, to use master plans to build dynamic industries, but focusing in particular in the districts, in the metros that the Honorable Jacobs was asking, because Honorable Jacobs, we're very much interested now to ensure that we can focus on building regional economies. So we're working with the different departments and provinces. In this case, Deputy Minister Gena and myself have been working with small business development and tourism because they have quite a strong presence in the plan of provinces. So we're working together, the four of us, and the DG October is also convening an interdepartmental team of senior officials, including those departments. So in the coming, during the course of this month, we'll meet with the provinces so that we can focus on what Minister Patola is saying. So what are going to be the export plans of provinces, in particular focusing on districts, and how do we integrate the work of the master plans into what is the provinces are doing in their districts and metro. So that's all I wanted to add. Otherwise, thanks to Minister Patel. I think the response was quite comprehensive. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
And the DG will follow. I hope the connectivity is better, DG.
Thanks, Chair. I hope you can hear me better.
Great, great. Well received.
Thank you, Chair. Then just to emphasize, I think to follow up from the Minister and the Deputy Minister Majola, on the SEZs and especially raised by Honorable Mboyani about Mosina Makado and Nkomazi, as indicated, the Deputy Minister has undertaken a number of visits to those two SEZs, and he has now created the political space for us to implement what was outlined by Minister Patel. So we are taking 3 board seats on each of those SEZs, and we are also putting in place the management team to basically fast-track both the infrastructure work, the building of top structures, and securing the investors. So Honorable Mboyani, as indicated, this unit at the IDC now is prioritizing Nkomazi, Mosina Makado, Saldanha, and the Wild Coast SEZ. So these SEZs will be getting now our special attention, and as I said, it will be based on the new model. And as indicated by Deputy Minister Majola, we also have created at the technical MINMEC, all the HODs and all the provinces are representative, and they've now bought into this new model as outlined by Minister and endorsed by Cabinet. So they've accepted this model that now national will play, to play a lead role now in these SEZs, and we are also using Kuga Development Corporation and the DBSA to do the actual overseeing of the investment. So we've used them in Tshwane,
We use them in the Harry Smith Malutia Pofong, as he said. So, and then we're using the IDC to assist with investment facilitation. So that is the new model. It has now also been accepted by all the provinces. So we expect full cooperation with this new model. Last week, Deputy Minister Majola was in Saldana, where, as you know, they have now at least moved to secure 7 new investors. And again, we are using the same model there. And then just to highlight some of the cooperation with other departments, I think the one to mention really is a good highlight where we worked with DPE and Transnet is in Kwadukuza, which people will know as sort of 80 kilometers from Etiquini, former Stanga area. There in that area, currently there's a big manufacturer, Estel Harnesses, part of the MetAir Group. They currently employ 2,000 workers. And through the cooperation between the Minister of DPE, and our work with DPE, we unlocked the Transnet land. And they are currently under construction, so they have created an additional 3,000 jobs. So that factory will now move from 2,000 to 5,000 in the Kwadukuza area. And Transnet has released the land. And then we work here, and the company will be renting that land from 20, 30-year lease and so on. But that was cooperation through DPE and then through getting Transnet to come in. But then also the municipality and the province was really driving that and alerted us to the strategic project where they had a major bottleneck. And then Honorable Hermans, where we cooperating, so you mentioned the CIPC BIS portal. So there, as you know, we're allowing now for within 20 minutes you can register your company, but it's also with other departments. So for example, we worked with Department of Labor and Invest SA, and CIPC have worked with Department of Labor, so you can simultaneously register for UIF, you can register for workmen's compensation, you can register for your tax registration. So that was where we cooperate with interdepartmentally to create the ease of doing business. A further example, Invest SA is working on the World Bank improving our rankings, and they are working, for example, with the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs, because you know one of our biggest bottlenecks is in the registration of property, also raised by His Royal Highness Burns Ngamashe. There we're assisting with Deeds Office, which is located within the Department of Land Affairs, and there we are cooperating with them to fast track and smooth that. We're simultaneously working with the municipalities to fast track construction licenses and so on. So there are many examples. And then, as the minister mentioned, the Tshwane Trebashe line, which we've now created through cooperation with DPE, with the province and the municipalities in Gauteng and Eastern Cape, we've created a formal SIP. We're making an application under the Investment South Africa, and then we are chairing the technical committee, which is driving that rail and port project, which, as the minister indicated, we hope to mobilize funding through cooperation with all the partners to raise about 10 billion rand for the reconstruction of the rail infrastructure and the port infrastructure. But those are just examples of where we're working on a district basis and with other departments. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe we can actually get the Minister, I'm not sure if I've got any further points, but we can actually try and actually round up on the issues with the Secretary checking with members. Minister, before we actually take the verification of contribution by members, can I check with you, were those two members, team members, Secretariat? Let me hear from you.
Chair, there's no hands raised, Chair, at the moment.
Okay. Maybe what I can do is to request the Minister, because there is actually, might be a need that there are issues in the teams that we still have to emphasize. If not, one will actually ask that at least let's round up our discussion. representation and engagement with actually clear outcomes and program moving forward. So if I can go back to you, Minister.
Well, first, thank you very much, Chairperson. And I want to appreciate the feedback that members of Parliament has given the Deputy Minister and myself, as well as the team of officials. We will, of course, now work on taking the framework that I've outlined here today and seeking to embed it in both our annual performance plan and in the budget vote itself, and so that resources flow. One of the significant things will be to have an openness to experiment, to try different ways of doing things, to go back to the comments that more than one honourable member has raised, that fresh approaches. And part of that would be in each of these areas seeing how we can get more done. So I want to thank the honourable members for helpful insights, for frank feedback, and we look forward to engaging with the Portfolio Committee when we table our annual performance plan, which will then seek to land some of these planes. And over the next 12 months, we would have an opportunity to report regularly back to the Portfolio Committee and get a feedback from the representatives of the people on how we're doing, where we need to strengthen our efforts, and where we need to scale up. So thank you very much, Chairperson. This has really been helpful that we've had as much time as we've had to be able to go into the detail that was required. Thank you.
Well, the interest, Minister, will be largely to ensure that there's implementation and impact. Because in terms of what we really have to look at, the work we are doing, we should ensure that there is stability and sustainability into growth and development. Because if we don't do that, we might be throwing potatoes in an open bag or bag with holes. So the issue of stability is quite a big one. And it's actually an encouraging point to make sure that when we look at this district plan or model, it has to ensure that we find a more efficient way of interdepartmental coordination when work is actually done. But obviously, it should actually work on intersphere, because in some cases you do find that a national, provincial, and municipality has to actually do certain things to ensure that we don't have the previous situations we had was what we called white elephants. I'm sure you'll remember, Minister. When you talk white elephants, which means you go, you do stuff, you don't look at environment and conditions, you actually continue doing what you should. And in some cases, you realize that the process is not aligned properly. That there's actually someone who come build a road, and next point there's someone who come to dig for stormwater. And the next point is actually digging up of the same place or across the same road where we're actually putting cables of electricity and water pipes. So I'm just saying it adds a lot of value to have actually interdepartmental, intersphere. And I think the district model part is to emphasize that kind of cooperation and coordination, because obviously for government, if ever you with limited resources, you waste what you have, you do actually lose a great deal, and in the long term, you do find that we are not actually achieving much. So I'd like to thank you, Minister, for the sharing and the discussion or engagement. And I'm sure in terms of our next program, tomorrow we'll actually be looking at the entities part with more detail. We will actually then be able to actually take the process for entities specifically be able to receive programs on the basis of what you have prepared and engage with the portfolio committee moving forward. Thank you very much, Minister. So I think we can actually then conclude our meeting. Secretary, I'm not sure if there's any announcements, issues that you have got, because I'm sure, Minister, you're quite happy and comfortable that we can proceed. Secretary, let me just check if there's any specific things we can actually announce, but for tomorrow, I'm sure you can speak to that. If there's any issue, then we can actually be able to pick up on that. Secretary,
Tomorrow we are meeting with the NEF and the IDC tomorrow, Chair. So there's nothing in addition to that.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sure we can conclude because that was today's program. The meeting is adjourned. We will reconvene tomorrow for the other part of our presentation. Thank you, Minister. And